This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
That's music by Thundercat from his album coming out next month called It Is What It Is. Thundercat has cut an unusual path for himself. He was born Stephen Lee Bruner and started out playing bass with his father, who had played drums with Diana Ross and the Temptations. Bruner was in a boy band and then, strangely enough, moved on to a punk band called Suicidal Tendencies. As a session bassist, he worked with Erykah Badu, Childish Gambino, and the late rapper Mac Miller, who was also a close friend of his. Thundercat's particular way of merging jazz, R&B, funk, and hip-hop caught the attention of Kendrick Lamar, and they collaborated on Lamar's record To Pimp a Butterfly.
Float better than he would. No light jacket, I'm at the guard of Nazareth. But your flood can be misunderstood. War telling me they're full of pain, resentment. Need someone to live in, I'm just to relieve tension. Me, I'm just a tenant. Landlord said the war vacant more than a minute.
Brianna Younger writes and edits music coverage for The New Yorker, and she talked with Thundercat last year while he was on a week-long residency at the Blue Note Jazz Club in New York.
I guess we'll start with where we are now, like with you in the midst of this residency. Like, how has that been going so far? Like, this is your first residency of this caliber?
Yeah.
Oh, ever?
Yeah, like I've never had a residency before.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So people know you from To Pimp a Butterfly. A lot of people, at least, were introduced to you that way. But you also, you know, have a long resume from Suicidal Tendencies to playing with Erykah Badu. But let's go to the very, very beginning. And what even made you pick up a bass to begin with?
Well, I think I just had a natural affinity for like swords and, you know, sticks. You know, it's like there's that one kid that, you know, like you always got to tell him to put stuff down, or he's just playing a little too rough with things. There's a bit of that. But then there's also mostly my dad that inspired me, because it's like growing up in a house of musicians. You know, it's not saying that, it's indirectly saying you're going to play an instrument. Like, it doesn't matter, you know. It's intense, you know, and it's like it's not always for the faint of heart. when you have a family that does music, because everybody has an opinion, you know, everybody feels things differently, and you have to respect that. But, you know, it's like, it's just, you learn and you grow. You still grow and learn together, but it's like, it's just different. Me and my older brother would grow up playing together more than me and my younger brother. And in growing up with my older brother being, you know, that he's this virtuoso drummer, it was very intimidating, but it caused me to grow. You know, if I didn't have my brother around, I wouldn't play the way I play.
So some of your early records, like Young Jazz Giants, sound more in the vein of traditional jazz than, you know, as your work as Thundercat. How did you develop that sound and what would become the Thundercat voice over time?
The real thing is that I started writing music for my instrument. And a lot of the time when you have an instrument that you play, it can become a bit of a role, you know, where, like I was saying, you start to fall into the idea of, like, I'm working, so it's cool. But I would push out a bit, you know, and because I didn't play piano, you know, because I wasn't like this guy trying to be this R&B singer, I would always create from my bass. And once I realized that that was an option, it kind of took on its own life.
You've talked in the past about kind of your decision to play 6 strings versus 4 strings and how, like, in your collaborations with other artists, that was kind of a thing where people may have wanted you to play more contained or essentially to shrink yourself. So why the 6-string? Like, what are some of the nuances of that, and how has it allowed you to become the artist that you saw yourself as?
It's like, you know, like I would say, like, sometimes when people see the 6-string, it's immediately intimidating, or it denotes to you're about to play too much. It's just like, you know, but a lot of the time I would be writing and that would be the best tool to write with for me because it gave me the most facility. And I wouldn't always take it out with me, but I would always be playing a 6-string on records that I would record for myself. It didn't become a reality until I had my other basses stolen, where I had to take that bass out, and that's where it started.
So your sense of humor is such a big part of what people know of you. Like, it's in your records, it's in your interviews. Like, anytime people hear Thundercat, it's a very lighthearted kind of situation, but, you know, life gets real, and that's also in the records. And
yeah.
I feel like Drunk was like the perfect culmination of I'm this funny guy, but also it's not always great.
Yeah.
Nobody move, there's blood on the floor. And I can't find my heart. Where did it go? Did I leave it in the cold? So please give it back, cause it's not yours to take.
You know, music sometimes can be like therapy. It can be, you know, soft and gentle, or it can be really, you know, intense and abrasive. And I don't know. I feel like humor is for the soul. You know what I mean? Like, it helps you get through. Even if it hurts, it's still better to laugh, I think.
One of the hardest things that I would imagine about being an artist is those tough times and the idea that you're expected to kind of process things in this very public way.
Yeah.
Obviously you've dealt with a lot of loss in your lifetime, but is that something you're feeling now with the recent loss of Mac and this idea that you'll be expected to somehow process this on your next record?
Well, I think it's the inevitable, first of all. It's like real life in art, you know, the imitation thing is real. I don't think it's expected. I mean, if I put out a trap album next, I would imagine that's just as expected.
Fair enough.
But it's moments like that, it's just what it is. It is what it is. I can't make up for something as precious as a life lost like Max. You know, it's no way it's not going to touch different places in my life, you know. There was a movie that came out some years ago with Denzel Washington and John Goodman, and it was about this, like, demon that would follow him through the city.
Oh, Fallen?
Fallen, you remember it. There were moments, like, after he died that felt a bit like Fallen or like They Live, because it was like everybody was in my personal life in that one moment, and I couldn't walk down the street without somebody looking and saying, I'm sorry, or like trying to catch my eyes. And it was a bit intense for me at first, but the truth is everybody mourns, you know, and Mac didn't just touch my life. That was just what that was proof of. And I had to see through that, you know, and like realize it is bigger. Again, it's bigger than me, you know. So my processing of it is, like I said, it's going to get touched.
Now I'm sitting here with a black hole in my chest.
Back to Pimp a Butterfly. Was that different than anything you've done prior?
Oh, yeah. That was a very demanding moment, you know. To this day, I still think, I look back on it, and I think about how much output was going on in that moment. And along with that, you know, realizing that that is the genius of Kendrick Lamar's writing and, like, it's rare, you know. It's like a lot of the time, especially in the rap game, rappers get far off into thinking it's just them. Kendrick was not afraid of anything. Like, and that would inspire me all the time. He would run up on all of it. We would have conversations about Joe Henderson. We have, you know, talk about those Miles albums. We talk about all kinds of stuff like that. It was just this continuous dance of, like, it was almost like a trust fall. It was like I didn't know where I was going. And it was one of those things where when that album was finished, being there for the very last mastering session up until 7-8 o'clock in the morning, and I went home, I just almost fainted and cried because it was just so, I was like, I had gone as far as I felt I could. I had given as all I could. You know, if I had lost like 100 pounds, that would have made sense. You know, but it was just like, I put my all. That's what I have from that, you know. It's like, and then we look up, and then it's, you know, it's like, oh, 11 Grammys. We were like, Jesus, you know. It's like,
I was gonna say, did you know it would be this?
No, I didn't even have a suit on at the Grammys.
It really changed jazz and improvisational music. Yeah.
It wasn't just the awards. It became a political statement. You see what it sparked. As much as everybody, there's moments in history when we look back, there's Dave Chappelle, there's Barack Obama, and then there's that time when Kendrick put out To Pimp a Butterfly. And it pushed, it made people uncomfortable. It made everything a bit disheveled. It brought the cream to the top. It shook everything up. And I think this is definitely one of those albums that when we look back, it will stand the test of time.
Of course.
You know, it's just, thank Kendrick for being the vessel, you know what I mean? Like, letting it happen. Because he could have easily been like, you know, I'm going to just put out this trap album.
I think you have a trap album on the way.
I keep saying this.
I think you're hitting.
You think I'm joking.
Love it. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Musician known as Thundercat. He spoke with The New Yorker's Brianna Younger last year. Thundercat goes on tour this month for his new album, It Is What It Is.